You're listening to an episode of a Wondery Plus exclusive series. To continue listening, join Wondery Plus and enjoy ad-free listening to over 40,000 episodes, early access to your favorite podcasts, and more. Find Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
It's 1906, New York City, and a young man named Ben Jones is sitting in an exam room waiting to see his doctor. It's a cool spring day, but Ben's forehead is dripping with sweat. Ben jumps, startled by the sound of the door opening. In walks the doctor, tall, with graying hair at his temples.
Mr. Jones, I'm sorry you're back. Is it still your nerves? I still can't sleep. I hardly eat. There's this knot in my stomach that just, it never goes away. Every time I close my eyes, I have these visions of being run over by a horse and buggy. I can't take it anymore, Doc.
The doctor nods, puts his stethoscope in his ears, and listens to Ben's chest. He can hear the man's heart beating as if he just ran a mile.
Did you try that new tonic I recommended? I did, but it didn't help. I still couldn't sleep a wink.
The doctor sits down in a chair and looks at his patient. The man is pale and thin with dark circles under his eyes. He is clearly suffering.
There are places upstate that you could go. Take a rest cure and give your nerves a break.
Ben shakes his head forlornly.
I need to work. My wife is pregnant.
He pauses, looks up at the doctor.
My friend told me about this new medication, but you need a prescription for it.
Oh yeah? What's it called?
Veranol.
I haven't heard of it.
My friend said it really helped. He said it knocked him right out.
The doctor studies his patient. It's clear the man's at the end of his rope. If he doesn't get some sleep soon, he won't be able to function well enough to provide for his wife and their new baby. But none of the doctor's recommended tonics have worked. The doctor sighs.
All right, what'd you say the name of it was again?
He pulls down his prescription pad.
Veranol. V-E-R-O-N-A-L. No harm in trying it. Here you go. Good luck, son.
Thanks, Doc. That night, as Ben gets ready for bed, he carefully measures out the powder and stirs it into a glass of water. Then he gulps it down. His wife watches, her hands resting on her belly.
I sure hope this works. Your tossing and turning has been keeping me up at night.
Ben smiles at her.
I hope so, too. I really need a good night's sleep.
As he settles into bed, he realizes he does feel more relaxed. In fact, he feels quite sleepy. For the first night in weeks, as he closes his eyes, he isn't haunted by the thought of being hit by a carriage. Adrenaline doesn't course through his body. He doesn't imagine horse hooves trampling his ribs and stomach. Instead, his thoughts are blessedly blank. He's so drowsy, he couldn't stay awake even if he wanted to. He drifts off, the knot in his stomach finally unraveled. That night, his wife sleeps soundly too, finally undisturbed by her husband's usual restlessness. But when she wakes up the next morning, she finds Ben's body cold to the touch. Later, she'd learn that the dose of Veranol the doctor prescribed was lethal. The medication depressed his central nervous system so much that his lungs stopped functioning. Even suffocation couldn't shake him from his deep state of sedation. Veranol was far from the miracle drug Ben and his wife had hoped for. Genuine anxiety relief was still decades away. From Wondery, this is American Innovations, and I'm Stephen Johnson. Anxiety has been a feature of human existence from time immemorial. But for much of that time, it was treated more like a character defect than a medical condition. But in the wake of the Civil War, doctors started seeing hundreds of soldiers who were all suffering from the same sort of problems. Things like rapid heartbeat, insomnia, and obsessive thoughts. Symptoms of what we would now call post-traumatic stress disorder. Increasingly, doctors began to recognize anxiety as a medical problem, but they still lacked an effective way to treat it. Entrepreneurs and pharmacists rush to fill the gap with pills and tonics and other elixirs that claim to offer a cure. Too often, however, these miracle treatments were secretly laced with opiates and alcohol, which created a host of other problems for patients. Then, in the early 20th century, the first barbiturate came on the market. Barbiturates were initially sold as a sleep aid because they depressed the central nervous system, effectively sedating the patients that took them. But they were also found to calm nerves. For a time, it seemed that doctors had finally discovered a medicine that could help their anxiety-ridden patients. But they quickly realized that barbiturates were not the holy grail of medications they'd hoped for. For one, they were addictive, and patients quickly built up a tolerance to them. But more importantly, it was dangerously easy for patients to overdose. Taking just slightly more medication than the prescribed amount would depress the central nervous system too much and stop patients from breathing. Barbiturates were directly involved in the deaths of Marilyn Monroe and Judy Garland. Something safer was needed. In the 1950s, a new class of tranquilizer drugs was developed to help with anxiety. The most famous and successful of them was Valium. It became a phenomenon. At one point, it was the most prescribed pill in the United States. It changed how medications are advertised and regulated and how we think about mental health. But while Valium became the most iconic of the major tranquilizers, the story of that brand actually begins with its predecessor, Milltown, which made the success of Valium possible. This is Episode 1, Milltown Magic.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's 1946, and in a public health laboratory in Wakefield, England, 200 miles north of London, Dr. Frank Berger and his wife Bozina, a trained nurse serving as his assistant, are getting ready to test the toxicity of a potential new preservative for penicillin. Bozina removes a mouse from a cage.
Are you ready with the injection?
Berger, a hulking man with an athletic build but a stooped posture, stands by, a syringe in his hand.
Yes, all set. I have high hopes for this one.
Penicillin is in short supply following World War II. It was in high demand during the war, but it's difficult to make and goes bad quickly, so the stocks have been depleted. Berger and his wife have been working on developing a preservative for years, since before Hitler invaded their home, Czechoslovakia, and they fled to England as refugees. They're currently testing a compound called mefenicin, which they have modified from a disinfectant. The effect on the mouse is immediate. He ceases all struggling. Bozina chuckles as she places him back in his cage.
Look how relaxed he is. His whole body just went completely limp.
Berger, who is prepping the next injection, turns around and looks at the mouse. He is sitting calmly, unlike his brethren who squeak and paw at the bars of the cage. Berger reaches in and gently tugs on the mouse's leg. It flops back down, completely relaxed. It's not the mouse's relaxation that catches Berger's attention, though.
Look at his eyes. They're following my hand. He's relaxed, but he's conscious and alert.
The only other times Berger has observed this level of relaxation in mice, they've gone unconscious. Bozina looks at her husband's face. She doesn't like what she sees.
I know that look. Don't you dare get distracted.
But Berger is distracted. His mind is racing, and he starts to pace the floor of the lab.
But think about what this could mean. I mean, a drug that calms people but allows them to function. If the toxicity of mefenacin is lower than barbiturates, we might have discovered a compound that could help get rid of anxiety. I mean, that would be a major breakthrough.
Bozina sighs.
We don't know that it's less toxic, and we need to stay focused on our job. We're looking for a preservative for penicillin, nothing else.
Berger nods. Rationally, he knows his wife is right, but he can't shake the idea of what mefenacin could be. Berger hates nervousness. He thinks it's a useless emotion that clutters the mind. He watches perfectly capable people squirm and lose their bearing under the slightest pressure. He wants to free them all from their physiology. He fantasizes about eradicating anxiety and how much more productive and innovative people would be without it. This would be a step on the way to enlightenment. On his own time, he continues to research the compound, and a few months later, he publishes a journal article on the drug and its relaxing properties. Hospitals start to use it to calm patients down before procedures, but Berger thinks it has larger potential. 3 years later, he gets a chance to prove it.
Two more Manhattans for you gentlemen.
It's 1949 in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and Berger is sitting across from Henry Hoyt, the president of Carter Products, a company best known for laxatives, moisturizers, and pills. Remedies that claim to help the liver, but are of questionable value. Berger and Bozina immigrated to the United States 2 years ago, looking for a fresh start. Berger is now an assistant professor at the University of Rochester. But because he was born partially deaf, he's found teaching difficult. Plus, Bozina is pregnant, and Berger wants a job that pays better than the university does. Hoyt, a short man who has been with Carter Products for 20 years, has big ambitions for the company, especially its new prescription drug arm. He just needs someone to run it for him. Hoyt holds up his glass.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Hoyt places his hands on the table and gets back to business.
Look, I know what we've got now isn't all that impressive, but I truly believe there's a real market for new prescription drugs. They aren't just for hospitals anymore. They're name brand products. The war changed all that. Americans are familiar with penicillin and cortisone now. They love the wonder drugs. Consumers believe in the power of medical research. Now, if we can, I don't know, find a pill that reverses aging, then patent and name it, market it to the world, we can make a boatload of money.
Berger bites his tongue. Hoyt's focus on profits rankles Berger. He believes that medical care is a birthright and should be free. In his view, a medical researcher's job is to find ways to ease suffering, not to develop products that make money. But he remembers Bozina at home pregnant with their child, so he says nothing and just nods. Hoyt doesn't notice Berger's reticence and carries on with his pitch.
You have an impressive history as a researcher, and your credentials are top-notch. I can just tell by looking at you that you're an ambitious young man, so tell me, what are your ideas for new drugs?
Berger seizes the opportunity.
There's this drug called mefenacin that I discovered a few years ago. It's a relaxing agent. They're using it in hospitals right now, but I think there are ways to improve it. Right now, it has to be given intravenously, and it only works for a few hours. I think we could develop a pill form and make it stronger. It could help a lot of people who are struggling with nerves outside of a hospital or institutional setting.
This time, it's Hoyt who bites his tongue.
Interesting.
Hoyt had been hoping to compete with something there's already a market for, like a new antibiotic or antihistamine. But Hoyt wants Berger, so he doesn't shut him down.
Well, sure, once you get the lab up and running at full speed, you could work on your own projects. And how about this? On top of the $12,000 a year salary I'm prepared to offer, I'll also give you 1% of the sales of any product you bring to market.
Berger is so shocked, he swallows wrong, choking on his Manhattan. $12,000 is more than twice what he's making at the University of Rochester, and he hasn't heard of any researcher getting a percentage deal like the one Hoyt is offering. When his coughing subsides, Berger sticks out his hand.
You have a deal.
The two men shake on it. Berger and his wife moved to New Jersey from upstate New York a few months later. And Berger did as Hoyt asked. He professionalized Carter Products' lab. He hired chemists, set up an animal lab, bought new equipment, and oversaw the research of drugs. With the exception of antihistamines, most of the world's medicines had been discovered accidentally. So setting up and overseeing a lab to deliberately look for pharmacological solutions to medical problems was a gargantuan task. But in between all that, he and another chemist started synthesizing compounds that Berger believed would improve upon mefenacin. The two of them synthesized over 500 different compounds over the course of a year. And in 1950, they finally stumbled upon something they thought would work, meprobamate. Internally, they called it Milltown, after a nearby town, as was the custom at Carter Products. They had drugs in development called Newark and Princeton as well. When they filed for the patent, they dropped one of the L's to make it easier to trademark. Berger tested Milltown on mice and then monkeys. The relaxation properties he'd seen in mefenacin back in England 4 years earlier were still there, and the toxicity levels were still lower than in barbiturates. But the benefits of Milltown lasted longer than those of mefenacin. By the end of 1951, Berger was ready to start human trials. Excited, he went to tell Hoyt the good news. But Berger was in for a surprise.
No human trials. You need to shelve Milltown.
Berger gasps. He feels like he's been punched in the gut. This is so unexpected, he doesn't know what to say.
Sir, this compound has real potential.
Hoyt cuts him off.
As a scientific breakthrough, sure, but not as a marketable product. Tranquilizers are used in hospitals, but there is no precedent for them being used outside a hospital. Not to mention all these darn new laws.
Earlier in the year, Congress had expanded the role of the Food and Drug Administration. Previously, with a few exceptions, it was up to the manufacturer to decide if a medication should require a prescription. Now, the FDA was the sole arbiter of prescription status. Companies like Carter Products, which sold a number of over-the-counter medications, were worried that the FDA would target their products, in which case they would have to spend time and money convincing doctors to prescribe their medications.
I need you to concentrate on drugs we now sell, not gambles like an outpatient tranquilizer. You know psychiatrists. They think all our problems can be solved by talking about our mothers. They're not going to prescribe a pill that will put them out of business.
Berger grinds his teeth. Hoyt is being short-sighted, but more importantly, Berger knows this is a medication that will help people. They should be able to have access to it. Berger takes a deep breath. He needs to speak Hoyt's language, and Hoyt's language isn't the greater good. It's the bottom line.
Sir, I think you're making a mistake. Gambles like this, they can pay off big, often more than the safe bet. I'll tell you what, I'll do some market research. Maybe I'm wrong. In the meantime, you work on those antibiotics and such. You can't make money only making big bets. You have to play it safe, too.
Berger nods his head.
All right. Sounds like a plan.
Hoyt hired Harris Pohl, a venerable research firm out of Rochester, New York. He asked them to conduct a survey of doctors around the country and asked them if they would prescribe medication for people suffering what Hoyt called everyday anxiety. These were not people who needed to be institutionalized. They could function, but their anxiety impacted their quality of life. It made them irritable. They had difficulty sleeping. There were people who found themselves sweating and panicky in crowds. People who had never felt able to relax after a day at work. Harris Pohl surveyed 200 doctors. When the results came back, the sentiment was clear. Overwhelmingly, the physicians had responded, no, they would not prescribe a tranquilizer to outpatients. Hoyt told Berger the bad news. The research had borne out Hoyt's fears. There was not a market for Milltown. It was time for Berger to shelve the drug for good. Berger nodded and agreed. But as soon as the meeting was over, he headed back to his own office and shut the door. With his heart racing, Berger picks up the phone and dials. After a moment, a woman on the other end answers.
Berkeley Chemicals.
Bob Milano, please. It's Frank Berger.
As he waits for Milano to pick up the phone, butterflies start to flutter in his stomach. His mouth goes dry. He's risking everything for this. If he gets fired, it's going to be a real struggle to find another job that will pay as well as this one. He's jeopardizing his family's financial security. Before he can talk himself out of it, though, Milano picks up the phone.
Frank, long time no chat. Are you ready for us to make that powder for you?
As a small operation, Carter Products didn't have the capabilities to manufacture enough of the Milltown powder on its own. And so, even before Berger knew that Hoyt was having doubts about the medication, Berger had put out calls to chemical companies to find a manufacturing partner. While many of the big-name firms, like DuPont, thought Carter Products was too small to do business with, Berger had hit it off immediately with Bob Milano, the president of Berkeley Chemicals. Berger takes a deep breath.
Yep, we're ready.
Oh, great. And this is for human trials, right?
Uh-huh.
Congrats, that's a big step.
Thanks. Now, when you invoice us, can you put it under a different name, not Milltown?
Sure, we can put it under whatever you want.
Berger exhales loudly. Hoyt may not believe in Milltown, but Berger does. And he has a plan to show Hoyt that he's wrong about the market for it. American Innovations is sponsored by Policy Genius. The year 2020 shows up a lot in science fiction. And in that science fiction, there were a lot of wild predictions that by now we'd be teleporting to work or living on Mars. And a lot of those predictions were wrong. The truth is, we'll always get the future wrong, which is why we need to get life insurance right. That's where Policy Genius can help. Policy Genius makes finding the right life insurance a breeze. In minutes, you can compare quotes with the top insurers to find your best price. In fact, you could save $1,500 or more a year by using Policy Genius to compare life insurance policies. And Policy Genius doesn't just make life insurance easy. They can also help you find the right home and auto insurance or disability insurance. So if your science fiction dreams for 2020 still haven't become science fact, don't get discouraged. Get life insurance. It takes just a few minutes to find your best price and apply at policygenius.com. Policy Genius. We'll always get the future wrong. Better get life insurance right.
I went to my son's baseball game this weekend. I can't remember the last one I went to. It's been years. He's so good.
It's 1953 in Orlando, Florida, and Dr. Lowell Selling is sitting across from a patient. He's been treating her for years. When she first came in, she was so tense she couldn't listen to the radio or watch TV. The sound was too much for her. It sent her heart racing. She had stopped socializing with her friends, and her life had shrunk to her house and her husband. But in the past few months, things have almost completely turned around.
Huh, that's incredible.
The woman beams.
And then when we got home, I watched a television program with my husband. He was so happy.
Dr. Selling takes notes, smiling back at her. This is an incredible improvement, one he wouldn't have predicted even 6 months ago. Dr. Selling was skeptical of Milltown when Frank Berger called him and asked if he would be willing to give this new medication to his anxious patients and report back the results. He wasn't sure if a drug could help his patients, but Berger had a reputation as a gifted scientist, so he was willing to try. And now, he had to admit, he was impressed. Patient after patient was reporting back positive experiences. They were sleeping better, they were going back to work, and generally enjoying their lives more than they had been.
And how often are you taking the Milltown? 4 times a day, same as always. With meals and before bed.
That's right. Dr. Selling nods, writing it down.
Have you ever felt like you wanted to take more? Like the pills aren't doing enough?
The woman thinks for a moment and then shakes her head.
No, I think it's working just right.
Great.
That's all for today. Make sure you stop by and see Judy on your way out. She'll get you set up for the urinalysis.
Have you seen the numbers on my last tests?
Is the drug safe?
Oh, absolutely. We're not seeing any signs of toxicity in either your urine or your blood. It's perfectly safe. The woman's whole body relaxes.
Oh, that's a relief. I don't want to go back to my life without this magic pill.
Dr. Selling wasn't the only psychiatrist testing out Milltown. Berger had also sent pills to a doctor in New Jersey who was having the same success. Between the two doctors, Milltown was tested on 200 patients over a 12-month period. He effectively orchestrated the human drug trials that Hoyt had refused to approve. Today, the FDA has much more stringent rules on testing new drugs. They require thousands of patients and double-blind studies. But Berger's secret trials met the industry standards of the time. By the end of 1954, Berger had the ammunition he needed. He would go back to Hoyt and show him that the pill had psychiatric value and that doctors could be convinced to prescribe the medications.
You did what?
Hoyt looks at Berger in disbelief. He is stunned that his employee went behind his back and ran human trials of Milltown after he expressly forbade it. He can feel his face turning red and his blood pressure rising. He starts to pace. Berger holds out his hand, trying to calm his boss down.
I'm sorry, sir, but I didn't see another way forward. That was the point. There was no way forward because I said not to go forward. And I apologize for my tactics, but if we can just look at the results, 78% of one psychiatrist's patients and 90% of the others reported that their symptoms improved.
Hoyt stops pacing.
Those are impressive numbers. They're astronomical. The medication works.
Hoyt flops into his chair and rubs his hand through his hair. He hired Berger because he was ambitious and had gumption. This is the price of that, he supposes.
The problem was never whether or not the drug would work. I have complete faith in you as a chemist. The question was whether or not we can sell it.
Berger leans forward in his chair, a twinkle in his eye.
I have a plan for that, too. Of course you do.
Hoyt sighs.
Okay, tell me the plan. First, the two psychiatrists are currently working on an article about the success they saw for the Journal of the American Medical Association.
Hoyt nods.
Okay, that will lend some legitimacy to the drug, but I'm not sure it will do enough to create the kind of market we need. That by itself won't, you're right. But next April, the Federation of American Societies for Experimental Biology is holding a conference in San Francisco. Biologists, medical researchers, innovative psychiatrists will all be there. If we can make a big enough splash there, we'll have doctors who will be willing to prescribe Miltown to their patients. And how do we make sure we make that kind of splash?
I have a... Hoyt cuts him off.
Don't tell me. You have a plan.
I do indeed. It's 1955, and Frank Berger is standing in front of a screen in the main room of the meeting of the Federation of American Societies for Experimental Biology. Behind him plays a film of a group of rhesus monkeys. They rattle their cages and make horrendous noises, biting and hitting each other. Berger looks out into the crowd. He knows Hoyt is there watching him. He needs to ace this presentation. They've filed Miltown with the FDA as a new drug, but if Hoyt doesn't have doctors rushing him, eager to prescribe the medication to their patients, he could still sink the drug. Berger takes a deep breath. It's time to begin. Berger stops the projector.
Gentlemen, the rhesus monkey. I'm sure most of you are familiar with these guys. We all use them in a lot of experiments. And what's one thing we know about them?
He pauses for dramatic effect.
It's how notoriously bad-tempered they are. They're ferocious. If you don't wear your gloves and your face mask when you're handling them, you're in for a trip to the doctor's office, am I right?
He starts the projector again.
Okay, this is a little better, right?
On screen, the monkeys are now sleeping.
These monkeys have gotten a dose of barbiturates. They're calmer, that's true. But they're not exactly what you would call functional. And that's okay for a monkey. Their only job is to hang out in a cage until we poke and prod them. But it's not okay for a busy executive who has presentations to give or clients to placate. It's not okay for a mother who has children to take care of. If only there were another option.
The image on the screen changes. The monkeys are now awake, but calm. They sit quietly, playing with toys that Berger has placed in their cage. Their cognitive function is intact, but the fight has been taken out of them.
Gentlemen, I present the other option. These monkeys have been given a new drug that we at Carter Products are very excited about. We call it Miltown. You can see the effect for yourself. Unlike barbiturates, this drug is not a sedative. It does not suppress the central nervous system. This is a tranquilizer. It calms the anxious patient, but leaves him awake and functional.
Berger looks out into the audience, and he feels good. He finds Hoyt in the crowd. He's looking at the scientists, excitedly clapping and talking to themselves, a smile on his face. He looks to Berger and gestures his applause toward him. Berger breathes a sigh of relief. He did what he needed to do. It's Monday, May 9th, 1955. The first day Miltown is on the market. Hoyt has worked with a publicist to alert medical reporters around the country that a new drug is available to help people with everyday worries. He's had his assistant go to a newsstand and buy a copy of every newspaper they carry. But as Hoyt leafs through paper after paper, his heart begins to sink. There is not a single mention of Miltown. Every medical story is focused on recent problems with the newly invented polio vaccine. Hoyt was depending on publicity to help jumpstart demand for Milltown. But Berger is still uncomfortable with the idea of medicine as business. He refuses to advertise directly to consumers. He's insisted that Carter products only run ads in medical journals and in mailings directly to physicians. And even then, he demands that all ads be factual and science-based, unlike other ads for medication that exaggerate their efficacy. Other pharmaceutical companies have started hiring what they're calling detail men, who go to hospitals and medical conferences and pitch various drugs to doctors. They throw parties and host dinners, wooing doctors while praising the drug they're shilling. But Berger refuses to let Carter Products hire any detail men. It isn't that Berger doesn't want Milltown to be successful. Per the terms of his original deal with Carter, he's entitled to 1% of the sales. But he wants the drug to be marketed ethically. He feels the value of the medicine speaks for itself. Hoyt isn't so convinced. He'd spent decades at Carter Products marketing toiletries and liver pills of questionable value before he pivoted to prescription medication. He knows the importance of advertising, but Berger made it clear that he would walk if Carter marketed Milltown in a way that he saw as unfit. Hoyt knows that Berger is essential to Carter's success, so he abides by Berger's rules. Hoyt was right to worry. Sales started off sluggish. The first 2 months the drug was on the market, it only made $15,000 total. But suddenly, in August, sales jumped to $85,000, and they continued to rise steadily through the rest of the year. At first, neither Hoyt nor Berger could figure out what had caused the increase, but it soon became clear. Milltown had become a hit with a segment of the population neither man had ever expected to reach. Your credit card probably gives you 1% cash back, but what does your bank account give you? Most banks give you 0.1% APY interest on your savings, but you should be earning more. With the Wealthfront Cash Account, you earn more interest on your money. They have one of the highest interest rates in the market at 1.78% annual percentage yield. That's 19 times more interest than the national average of 0.09%, according to FDIC.gov. It's easy and fast to get started. It only takes $1 and a few minutes to open an account. You can even do it right from your phone, no paperwork required. There are no fees, and your money is FDIC insured, up to $1 million through their partner banks. Right now, you can sign up for the Wealthfront Cash Account in less than 5 minutes by visiting wealthfront.com/AI. That's wealthfront.com/AI to start earning 19 times more interest on all your savings. One more time, wealthfront.com/AI. Wealthfront is not a bank. Cash Account is offered by Wealthfront Brokerage, LLC, member FINRA SIPC. Wealthfront conveys funds to partner banks who accept and maintain deposits, provide the interest rate, and provide FDIC insurance. The APY is subject to change.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral Way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code WONDERY to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
It's 1955 in Burbank, California. Milton Berle strides on stage, his eyes trained on the large cameras following him, the studio audience behind them. Dressed in a black suit with a skinny tie, his hair slicked back and parted on the right, Berle feels good. Now 47, the stage has been his home since he was 5 years old. Over the course of his life, he's appeared in silent films, in vaudeville theaters, on Broadway, and on radio. But television is the medium he soars in. They call him Mr. Television. At one point, he commanded 97% of the viewing audience. His show is so popular that some restaurants close every Tuesday at 8 when it airs. Earl grins widely into the camera.
Ladies and gentlemen, I feel wonderful tonight. And you might think I feel wonderful every night, but I feel extra wonderful tonight. And it's all because of a little pill called Milltown. It works wonders. I've never felt so relaxed. Any stress I've ever felt, it's gone. I like this pill so much, I'm thinking of changing my name to Uncle Milltown.
Across the country, in a suburb outside Columbus, Ohio, Jack Waters sits on a couch watching Burl's show. He and his wife watch it religiously every week. They like the outlandish costumes he wears, and the sketches make them laugh. Jack needs to laugh. Work has been stressful lately. He's been aiming for a big promotion, and he's not sure he's going to get it. There's another ambitious young man in his office he thinks his boss likes better, but he just bought a dishwasher for his wife, and money is feeling tight. Jack takes a sip of his drink. He can feel his muscles tensing as he thinks through all of this. He takes another sip. He can tell it's going to be another night of laying awake, worrying. The thought of losing sleep makes him worry more.
I like to take my Milltown with oyster juice. It gets me in a romantic mood, but puts me to sleep before I get myself in trouble.
As he laughs, Jack wonders to himself about this pill Burl is talking about. Milton Burl is one of the most successful people in the country. If Milltown can help Burl, then maybe it can help him. Maybe he'd do better at work if he was more relaxed. Jack makes a note to himself that he's going to call his doctor tomorrow and see about getting a prescription. Burl was not the only celebrity to use Milltown. On the contrary, Milltown was the hit of Hollywood. One reporter referred to Los Angeles as Milltown by the Sea. Amphetamines and barbiturates had long been popular among entertainment professionals, looking to lose weight for a role, racing to hit a deadline, or coming down from the stress of living in the public eye. Milltown seemed like the safest of all the pills floating around the industry. There was no stigma about taking the medication, as Burl demonstrated. Actors passed the pills around at parties and talked openly to the press about using it. Carter Products worked with publicists to feed stories of celebrities taking Milltown to the gossip magazines, spreading word of the drug across America. Hoyt had been wrong to think no one would prescribe Milltown. After all, it wasn't psychiatrists prescribing the drug, but physicians. Doctors were already used to prescribing sedatives in a hospital setting, so they had no problem switching to a drug they believed was milder and safer. Physicians saw Milltown, in the words of one historian, almost as emotional aspirin. It was low stakes, and if it helped a patient get through dealing with a successful presentation or holidays with difficult in-laws, there was no harm in taking it. In fact, it almost became a badge of honor to take Milltown, a sign of success. Medical journals wrote that white-collar workers and their wives were at particular risk for anxiety due to their intelligence. The patients described in the journal articles were stockbrokers, engineers, lawyers, and physicians themselves. As more and more people started taking Milltown, journalists and sociologists started to ascribe the prevalence of anxiety in the country to the cost of living in an ambitious nation. Medical textbooks even went so far to proclaim that upper-middle-class people experienced more anxiety than lower or working-class people, and that white people experienced it more than people of color. One reason why upper-middle-class people may have taken more Milltown was simply because it was an expensive drug, twice the cost of the average medication. Carter Products surpassed $2 million in revenue by the end of 1955, and as business boomed, other companies wanted in on the action. It's just before 10 a.m., and a balding, bespectacled man named Leo Sternbach is on his way to meet with his boss. Sternbach works for Roche Industries, a pharmaceutical company not too far from Carter Products' headquarters. Even though he doesn't have any reason to be nervous, he can feel adrenaline coursing through his body, making his hand tremble. It's an automatic reaction to being called in to see the boss. He shoves his hands in his pockets. In his late 40s now, Sternbach has been working for Roche for over 15 years, getting his start in their Swiss offices. Roche is primarily a vitamin company, and Sternbach made a name for himself there by synthesizing vitamin B7, which helps the body metabolize protein and glucose. As Sternbach approaches, his boss's secretary is on the phone. She waves at him that he can go in. Sternbach takes a deep breath. Standing outside the door, he straightens his tie and runs his hand through what's left of his hair. He opens the door and enters. His boss, a large man with thick glasses, sits behind his desk.
Leo, come in. Have a seat. Oh, thank you, sir.
Sternbach's boss doesn't waste any time with pleasantries. He launches right in.
I'll cut right to the chase. Vitamins aren't getting it done for us anymore.
Okay.
We've got a bunch of patents expiring, and there are a lot more vitamin companies than there used to be. We're getting competition everywhere we look.
Sternbach isn't sure why his boss is telling him this. Before he can think about it anymore, his boss has come out from behind his desk and taken the seat next to him.
Leo, have you heard about this drug, Milltown?
Sure, I think everyone's heard about it. I even tried it.
Oh, you did? Yeah, I was curious. It's nice. It really does calm you down. It makes you feel like nothing can bother you.
His boss nods. I want you to make us our Milltown. Sternbach looks at him for a second, taking in what he said, then smiles wide. This is going to be fun. The pill Sternbach will ultimately develop will go far beyond Milltown, and it will change psychiatric medication forever.
If you like our series, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, NPR One, and every major listening app, as well as at Wondery.com. If you're listening on a smartphone, tap or swipe over the cover art of this podcast. You'll find the episode notes, including some details you might have missed. And a quick note about these historical recreations you've been hearing. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said, so those scenes are dramatizations, but they're based on real historical research. You can find some of the articles we found useful in the episode notes. American Innovations is hosted by me, Stephen Johnson. For more information on my books about science and innovation, including my newly announced book, Enemy of All Mankind, out this May, you can visit my website, www.stephenberlinjohnson.com. Today's episode was based in part on Andrea Tone's book, The Age of Anxiety. Sound design on this episode is by Landon Lipinski. This episode was written by Austin Rackless, with editing by Liza Veal. Produced by Emma Cortland. Executive produced by Jenny Lauer Beckman, Marshall Louie, and Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.